This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 34 was recorded on July 15th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Danielle DiMartino Booth is back with us this week. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast for systematic trading and investing. They're even offering Macro Voices listeners a free book. I'll tell you how to claim it at the end of this episode. All-Star Danielle DiMartino Booth is back with us today. Danielle, last time on the program, you made an excellent argument describing all of the many reasons that you think the U.S. economy is not immune to a global slowdown that's already underway. And for any listeners who may have missed that episode, it was a couple of weeks ago, Danielle's All-Stars appearance. I highly recommend that episode. We've gotten quite a bit of feedback from both listeners and other guests about that interview. I want to specifically focus, though, on some of the other guests' feedback. And a question that Brent Johnson has indirectly posed is, you know, clearly, Danielle's right that the U.S. economy cannot be immune to what seems to be very clearly a global growth slowdown. But Brent wonders if it's possible that the U.S. stock market could actually have some immunity, because first we're going to have rate cuts that are probably going to cause people to scream and jump for joy, whether it makes sense or not. That's just what they do when there's rate cuts, is they buy equities. But Brent thinks that things are so bad around the world that if you're in another country, particularly in Europe, and you've got a really ugly situation, normally your safety trade is into your own country's sovereign bonds. Well, with negative yielding sovereigns in Europe, it's crazy to do that. Brent thinks maybe what we're going to see is a global safety trade into the U.S. stock market, partly because things are so bad and worse in many other parts of the world than in the U.S., but also partly because if the U.S. dollar continues to rally, those investors would get kind of a double whammy, the benefit of the FX as well as the benefit of being invested in a market that's much better than their own domestic markets. What do you think of that argument, Danielle? Is there room for maybe you to be right about the economy, but the usual expectation of a down stock market might not be associated this time?
Well, so I think that there are several different moving pieces here. As far as the global growth story goes, we've got container shipments, the three mega ports on the West Coast in California. We've got them down year over year. We've got the Dallas Fed World Trade ex-US. That's down year over year. And we've got a figure that is tracked out of the Netherlands that was plus 0.1%. We're waiting on July the 25th. We're going to see if this goes into contraction. It's on the cusp of doing so. We've never managed to avoid a global downturn in that context. But again, one of the measures that I cited was United States specific. So I think the more important question to ask me is, how long can the United States stock market stay out of trouble if the evidence that we're headed towards a global downturn and one here in the United States continues to mount? And that brings us to the Fed. I completely agree. It was one of our three big calls at the beginning of the year that the U.S. dollar was going to stay strong. We're sticking by that because, again, we consider things in the rest of the world to be worse off than they are here. If you look at past Fed easing cycles, in addition to this, especially when stocks are as high as they are today, all-time highs, history dictates that stocks actually can rally into the first and second rate cuts. So we're talking about potentially through September if things don't begin to unravel quickly, but at least into the summer, I think we could continue to see stocks here in the United States in this melt-up phase. And part of it is also just flat-out pure momentum. I speak to Katie Stockton. She's a great friend of mine. She's a technician. And again, there's no major catalyst right now to stop the upward momentum in the stock market, because even as evidence continues to mount of growing recession probabilities here in the United States, at the same time, they put in cement Fed rate cut probabilities, which is for the moment what markets are clamoring for more than anything else. They want to see that easing.
What about the U.S. dollar and how it performs through all this? A lot of dollar bears are back out in force saying, this is it, dollar's about to collapse. Other people are saying, no, actually, there's really a global dollar shortage. And if you look at something, for example, just earlier this week, I had Jeff Snyder on the program talking about the Fed funds rate moving above IOER, which means that bankers are effectively ignoring what seemingly is a risk-free arbitrage to take their reserves out of reserve and lend them to other banks. Seems like they're afraid to do so, or they want to be compensated with a much higher interest rate. So with this dollar shortage, is it possible that the dollar continues to appreciate significantly from here?
Oh, I certainly think it is. Depending on who you ask, we've got 10 or 13 central banks. You know, if you go into the emerging markets, that number gets even higher, that have been public in planning to ease. So we are going back into full-blown currency war mode, and we're going to win every currency war, period. And I think most people would agree with that, regardless of where they see rates headed. And if it's going to be a race deeper into negative territory, because this is not a race to the bottom, because we're at bottom with $13 trillion plus dollars of negative yielding debt worldwide. We're beyond the bottom. We're in negative territory. If other big central banks are going to take their interest rates further into negative territory, if the next step for the ECB, for example, is to go from negative 0.4% to negative 0.6% on their overnight rate, well, then yes, you could continue to see dollar appreciation, because it doesn't matter how low our yields get, as long as on a relative basis, they're that much higher. And then you add on to this dollar funding shortage issue, and a new report that came out, brand spanking new, from the Institute of International Finance. We're up to $246 trillion globally as of the first quarter. We're just $2 trillion shy of the all-time high hit in early 2018. So even with as little easing as we've seen, we've got more debt issuance after having one quarter when it just started to tick down a bit. So again, the animal spirits right now are very much alive, and that will benefit the U.S. dollar, and that will benefit the U.S. stock market for a time.
And what do you think the gating factor is that brings that time to a close? What's the series of events that ends that? Is it the actual onset of a recession where it becomes clear that we're in a recession and it's no longer a debate? Or what does it take in order to end that upward cycle?
Well, so let's go back to the idea of banks feeling that they don't want to take risk in this environment. What we have not had in the current cycle is a long-term capital management, or a tequila crisis, or a major municipal go bankrupt. We have not had any exogenous shocks to the system. So either we get bona fide proof that we are heading into recession, we get a sign, a non-farm payroll print that's not just ugly, but actually negative. We start to see initial jobless claims turn. Any of these things that validate the fact that we are heading into recession, I think that that's what slows down the stock market. And or go back to how I started to answer this question. When you have credit as stretched as it is today, it is impossible to say with a straight face, we're not in a situation where a hiccup can't happen, where a mistake can't happen, where a financial event can't throw us off because of the sheer preponderance of negative yielding debt around the world and the fact that U.S. government and corporate leverage are at their all-time highs. Something in these environments can go wrong. So you've got two different dynamics right now. Either we get proof we're heading into recession, or we have some kind of a financial event. But again, I'm going to bring that caveat back, not trying to talk out of both sides of my mouth. But if you're talking about another couple of trillion dollars of infrastructure spending coming out of China, which is what they were talking about in conjunction with naming that 6.2% growth rate, the lowest since records started being kept in 1992, if they're going to roll out as much stimulus as we can while the United States embarks on its first rate easing cycle in how long? Forever, it feels like. Then yes, liquidity could win the day for some time, and people will look past signs of economic slowing, in addition to the fact that some of that stimulus will have a true effect, especially in places like China, where the stimulus is handed out at gunpoint.
You talk about an exogenous event or a shock that would shake up markets changing this. Let me try this one on for size. There has been a lot of speculation by prominent voices recently, and by prominent voices, I don't mean bloggers on conspiracy blogs on the internet. I mean major investment banks like Goldman Sachs, saying we need to start thinking about the possibility. You know, President Trump started with Jay Powell, you're fired. And then somebody explained to him, Mr. President, actually, the Fed is independent by design. You don't have the authority to do that. You can't fire him. And there is now speculation that what President Trump could do to satisfy his own frustration with Fed policies is to direct Steve Mnuchin to directly intervene in foreign exchange markets, using the executive authority to direct the Treasury to take such action, which would effectively be the U.S. government completely working around and, in my opinion, undermining the intention of the Federal Reserve Act, which was to create the central bank as an independent entity that would not be subject to political pressure. But what Goldman is saying is the president really does have the authority to tell Steve Mnuchin to start intervening directly to try to weaken the dollar. It seems to me that the risk there is not just, you know, what it would mean for the dollar, but what it would mean for the rest of the world's confidence in the independence of the Fed as a central bank. Would that do it?
That is certainly a workaround. And boy, would that be something to see, given the fact that we've labeled how many, God knows how many countries, as currency manipulators in the past. For us to actually jump in like any other third world country and just get going, it could be done. And I certainly see where Goldman is coming from. And because of what we laid out in the beginning of our discussion, that if we're going to be engaged in a currency war via other countries, lowering their interest rates to a greater extent, which means that we are effectively fighting a losing war, that the dollar is going to continue to be strong and weigh on our manufacturing sector, which we already know is in recession, certainly that frustration could bubble itself up. I don't know that there's anything that this president would do to not get reelected. So there's nothing, in my view, outside the realm of possibilities. By the same token, you know, people have asked me, what is your oddball bet? What is to say that if the Fed wanted to ease more than it can with interest rates, that it doesn't come out of the gate and effectively do quantitative easing and rate cuts at the same time? Nothing is to stop them. They did quantitative tightening and rate hikes at the same time. So if double tightening is on the menu, why on earth can't double easing also be potentially up for grabs?
With respect to the president effectively working around the Fed to take direct action, is there any precedent anywhere in history of a U.S. president either threatening to do that or actually doing it? And if so, what happened?
Oh, gosh. Now you've got me. This is my great big, I don't know. I'd have to go read my history. What I can tell you is that I'm doing research for something I'm going to be writing about pretty soon. And I can see a bit of the frustration being justified on the part of the administration because Jay Powell is sticking to the line that says it is outside of the Fed's purview. Those are the words. Those are the words that I was taught the very first week I was inside the Fed, is we do not comment on the dollar. Well, guess what, Eric? I was looking back at the Federal Reserve meeting minutes from December of 2015 and January of 2016. And the number of times the word dollar was cited in those minutes was 25 and 28 times. That was coming off of a floor of about 10. So if and when there are currency issues in the economy, as exemplified by the Fed's own minutes, the dollar sure as heck does enter into the discussion. So I can see where Trump might be really frustrated if somebody's giving him this granular level of data saying the Fed is technically not allowed to intervene because of dollar strength, but it certainly has done so in the past.
Danielle, it's really fascinating what you said. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was you who coined the hashtag double tightening. It sounds like you're now coining a new hashtag, and it's the first person that I've heard mention it, which is double easing. Am I correct to interpret your comments that way? And I hope that we'll hear more from you on the subject.
You know, I think that it is a distinct possibility. We've seen Lael Brainard, who's obviously a very authoritative voice, one of the top four voices on the Federal Open Market Committee. We've seen her come out and talk about buying treasuries with less than a year of maturity and potentially going out to 2 years. That actually has to do with the fact that there are actual treasuries to buy, very little supply as you go out on the curve. But what would be the impediment to stop the Fed from double easing if they've already exemplified via quantitative easing in conjunction with rate hikes that they're able to do double tightening? I say that there's nothing out there to stop them.
Well, folks, you heard it here first. Hashtag double easing. Let's give Danielle credit for, I think, coining that one. And we'll get an update from Danielle on that and other topics in a couple of weeks. Today's All-Stars episode was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com. If you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets without emotions and without predictions, go to TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro, where you can claim a free book about a highly dependable and consistent yet frequently overlooked investment strategy. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.